previously on Red Pilled America.
The education system today is a weapon against black people.
We must take over the schools by any means necessary.
We call on all students to support our strike.
You are hereby directed we're out of this building.
Then they unbelievably took the university's dean hostage for 24 hours.
What it is a training ground.
According to the country's newspapers, the demonstrations were started because of Herbert Marcuse's book.
The whole world is watching.
Wherever the radicals in this new left appear, Marcuse somewhere is in the background.
Our program is going to be to come back on the campuses this fall and hit them harder than they've ever been hit before.
Where did wokeness come from? I'm Patrick Carelci.
And I'm Adriana Cortez.
And this is Red Pilled America, a storytelling show.
This is not another talk show covering the day's news. We are all about telling stories.
Stories Hollywood doesn't want you to hear.
Stories the media mocks. Stories about everyday Americans that the globalists ignore.
You could think of Red Pilled America as audio documentaries, and we promise only one thing. The truth.
Welcome to Red Pilled America.
We're at part four of our series of episodes entitled Woke Army. You've probably heard the first three, but if you haven't, stop and go back and listen from the beginning. We're looking for the answer to the question, where did wokeness come from, by telling the story of how an obscure group of German refugees started all of this woke madness and what we need to do to stop it.
So in our last episode, we told the story of how Herbert Marcuse inspired his student Angela Davis to put his radical ideas into action. When Angela landed in California to study under Marcuse at UC San Diego, she connected with the Black Panthers and helped them set up a rally to free their co-founder, Huey P. Newton, who'd been charged with murdering a cop. At the event, the Panthers expressed a desire to take over the educational system by any means necessary, even violence. As a graduate student working towards her doctorate, the message resonated with Angela Davis. The energy of the new Marxist alliance was building, but needed a trigger to unleash it on the American public. That trigger would come with the killing of Martin Luther King Jr. The Black Panther Stokely Carmichael warned that the country was going to burn like never before, and he was right. Violence erupted in cities all across America, some estimating that it was the worst social unrest since the Civil War. A few weeks later, Marxist revolutionaries staged a violent takeover of Columbia University, the same place that gave refuge to the Frankfurt School. The student-led insurrection spread to Europe and then to the 1968 Democratic National Convention. And Herbert Marcuse was seen as the intellectual ringleader of the violence.
Led by Governor Ronald Reagan, pressure began to build to remove Marcuse from his teaching post at UC San Diego. When the hammer finally dropped on the Frankfurt School intellectual's teaching position, the gloves came off. Marcuse began inciting students to continue the unrest, and Angela Davis put his words into action. She led a student break-in and takeover of UC San Diego's registrar building. In parallel, violence erupted at colleges throughout the country, including the birthplace of student insurrection, UC Berkeley. Socialists violently commandeered a plot of land owned by the university. Law enforcement pushed them out, and in the end, over 100 students were hospitalized, and one protester was dead. By the summer of 1969, the new proletariat that Herbert Marcuse highlighted in One Dimensional Man just 4 years earlier had finally matured, and they were now publicly talking about open warfare on the streets and college campuses of America.
It is July 20th, 1969, and man is about to land on the moon.
I'm going to step off the landing. It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Oh, that looks beautiful.
As the United States was putting up a quick win in the Cold War, American Marxists were playing the long game on college campuses, and they'd just made a move that would eventually start a socialist revolution in America. With the stated intention of increasing the number of black faculty members on campus, UCLA's philosophy department hired Angela Davis as an associate professor in the summer of 1969. She was just 25 years old and had not yet acquired her doctorate. But the radical faculty at UCLA were looking to provoke Republican Governor Ronald Reagan. He'd successfully pressured UC Regents to creatively end Herbert Marcuse's teaching gig at UC San Diego. He'd also blocked the militant Black Panthers from speaking on campus. So, the UCLA faculty decided to one-up Reagan by hiring a Herbert Marcuse disciple who was an actual member of the Black Panthers, Angela Davis. Before she even began teaching, an undercover FBI agent penned an article for UCLA student newspaper, the Daily Bruin, revealing that the philosophy department had hired a member of the Communist Party. But the article did not name the new hire. A week later, a writer for the San Francisco Examiner published a scathing story naming Angela Davis as the unnamed professor. This created the intended conflict because UCLA had an almost three-decade policy forbidding the hiring of communists. The faculty no doubt knew Angela was a Red and were aware of the university rule. They just wanted to challenge it.
On September 5th, 1969, Angela Davis, after being hired as a philosophy professor at UCLA, first admitted she was a member of the Communist Party, USA.
Angela Davis cited the university's policy on academic freedom, which was the catchphrase of the time, and by invoking the phrase, the Marxists used America's system against itself. Governor Reagan saw the whole affair like the 1964 UC Berkeley so-called free speech protest. In his eyes, the hiring of Angela Davis was a planned conflict to open up the university faculty to Marxist radicals.
Well, my own personal opinion, and that's all it can be, I have no evidence otherwise, my own personal opinion is that this entire incident, starting with the hiring of Miss Davis, was a deliberate provocation.
The radicals within the UC system were hell-bent on making politically minded leftist professors, like Angela Davis, the new norm on college campuses. Ronald Reagan had been fighting communism since his days in the Screen Actors Guild. He ran for governor on a platform of law and order. But the UC system was now sufficiently infiltrated by revolutionaries. From the militant Black Panthers to the radical socialist students to the openly Marxist academics like Herbert Marcuse. In the eyes of Ronald Reagan, the UC system was under siege, and Angela Davis had come to represent all of these groups. So, he amped up the pressure on the UC Regents to fire the professor before she began indoctrinating college students.
On September 19, 1969, the UC Regents, of which Reagan was a member, officially voted to fire Angela Davis for her membership to the Communist Party and immediately withheld her salary and benefits. Angela Davis responded to their decision.
The Regents seem intent on meting out punishments which concur with the fascist tendencies of the times. The sole reason they give for their intention to fire me is my membership in the Communist Party.
Now, I think that the real reason that they're firing me is not only because of my membership in the Communist Party, but because I have tried to involve myself as much as I could in the black liberation struggle in this country. I worked with SNCC, with the Black Panthers, and with the BSU when I was a student down in UCSC, the university campus at San Diego.
California Lieutenant Governor Edward Reinick responded to her allegations.
The woman is an admitted member of the Communist Party. She also, in her letter to Chancellor Young, indicated that she felt that the only way we could bring about the social change that's necessary today is through violence and militancy. I don't think we need that on campus, and so I'm for getting rid of her.
In the eyes of the Ronald Reagan administration, Angela Davis embodied the militant activist and radical intellectual cancer that had infected the American institution of academia. She had to be stopped. That's when Bettina Apotheker re-entered the picture. You may remember that Bettina was the communist student that helped organize the UC Berkeley protest that opened up college campuses to political activity. Bettina was actually a childhood friend of Angela Davis's. She recruited the black militant to a communist organization when she was in high school. Bettina came to Angela's aid to help rally the radical UCLA faculty and students to her side. And like at UC Berkeley, she was effective. The Student Legislative Council pushed for legislation at the college calling for professors to withhold grades from students until Angela was reinstated to her teaching position. Many signed on to the plan. Governor Reagan was asked about the effort.
If the black professors at UCLA and others elsewhere in the system won't grade, what action will you recommend to the regents?
Well, I think they're guilty of insubordination. I don't think they have any right to refuse to grade students who are taking legitimate catalog courses and leading toward a degree. And I think the students have a right to demand their grades and demand their credits.
UCLA faculty members applied pressure as well, raising money to pay for Angela's missed benefits and salary. Angela joined a group of radical professors to file a lawsuit against the UC Regents, demanding they reverse their decision. And the chancellor of the school also pushed back, insisting that the UC Regents were violating the university's academic freedom policy and vowed to reappoint Angela Davis. In early October 1969, even after being stripped of her professorship, Angela decided to thumb her nose at the UC Regents by teaching her philosophy class anyway.
Yesterday was the first day of the fall term at UCLA, and philosophy professor Angela Davis was on her way to teach her first class. Amid controversy, for Miss Davis admitted that she is a member of the Communist Party, and the regents who run the university decided because of that she should not be allowed to teach.
The school gave her Royce Hall, a prestigious UCLA auditorium. The UC Regents announced that the course would not be given any credit. Still, 2,000 students showed up for Angela Davis's lecture.
She is currently completing her doctoral dissertation under the direction of Herbert Marcuse and is an acting assistant professor of philosophy at UCLA. Last Friday, the Regents of the University of California voted to suspend Miss Davis from her teaching duties. And it is in this regard that she is here today. I introduce to you Professor Angela Davis.
Welcome back to Red Pilled America. So Angela Davis was fired for being a member of the Communist Party. Radical professors pushed back by filing a lawsuit against the UC Regents. Some faculty resisted as well, helping to raise money to make up for her lost wages and giving her the prestigious UCLA Royce Hall to lecture to a crowd of 2,000 students.
The Regents have fired me because they say I'm a member of the Communist Party. Now, those involved in the conspiracy seem to be either ignorant or outright disdainful of the very process of education. Now, I said not too long ago that their decision to fire me pointed to the existence of racism in the society. And they proved themselves, I think, totally incapable of understanding that there's more to racism than just psychological attitudes. I think, you know, I've demonstrated that on one level, that there is something that we can call institutional racism and that it exists in the university.
This was October 1969, over a half a century ago. Any of that sound familiar? Angela went on to parrot the words of Herbert Marcuse. She argued that students needed to be awakened to the true reality of society. In other words, they needed to go woke.
The mind has to be liberated merely in order to perceive the world, to see society, to understand what its advantages are, what its disadvantages are. I've been asked over and over again, how can you really be committed to the struggle for liberation and leave your ideas outside of the classroom, leave your political opinions outside of the classroom? Now, I maintain that political opinions should be brought into the classroom. They belong in the classroom. And I suppose this was why the Regents fired me. They intend to keep the knowledge developed in the university in the service of the prevailing oppression. And I guess they were right from their point of view. The fact that I'm a member of the Communist Party, that I'm involved in the activities of the Che Lumumba Club, which is an all-black collective of the party committed to the struggle for black liberation, says something about the kind of mind that I have. I can't and I won't keep my political opinions out of the classroom. I think they belong there. Now, I've come to the conclusion that the elimination of racism, human suffering, can only come about through socialism. Since knowledge should provide answers to these problems, I feel that I have every right, when the occasion presents itself, that is, when it's relevant to what's at hand, to say to my students, I have given these things a lot of thought. My conclusion is that only some form of communism is going to solve our basic human problems.
After her lecture, students were asked what they thought about the Black Panther professor's speech.
What was your reaction to the lecture?
I think she is a superb lecturer. You can learn so much, as I infer from just what she said today. It was terrific.
Well, I think she's trying to overthrow our system of government, and she admits that. And while I think it is bad to limit freedom of speech of any group because it limits democracy, I think it is better to have a limited democracy that will last for a long, long time than complete democracy, complete freedom that lasts only for a brief period.
If I were able to deliver that coherent, that beautiful, and that intellectual lecture on my first time to how many thousand people there were in that place, I'd feel like a superstar.
Angela's in-your-face campaign worked. 2 weeks later, Superior Court Judge Jerry Patch ruled that the UC Regents' decades-long policy prohibiting communists from being hired on campus was unconstitutional. Angela took a victory lap in front of a crowd of a few thousand students.
The 25-year-old philosophy professor, who was fired from her UCLA teaching post by the Regents because she is a communist, said the controversy her case created had its benefits. It exposed the governor and the Regents as unscrupulous demagogues, and she said it focused public attention on the sorry state of education. A court decision last week declared the Regents' action unconstitutional, and so she is now teaching a credit course.
You know, I'm gonna present, you know, things from a Marxist perspective, but I'm gonna say that that's what it is. There are very many professors who talk from the perspective of the capitalist system, but they don't state that this is, you know, from that perspective. They talk about it as if that were objective reality, and as if that were the only way of looking at things.
Angela Davis said the Regents want to indoctrinate students. She says education should provide tools with which to evaluate ideas and liberate the mind. And she drew her largest hand when she said, "We have to create a revolution in this society."
A California state spokesman talked to a reporter about the judge's decision.
I think everybody anticipated this would happen in the lower courts. The Regents, if I read their intentions aright, are determined on a long legal fight. It may take many months, perhaps years, up through the ordinary channels of appeal, clear to the United States Supreme Court. My own hope is that by the time the case reaches that latter high tribunal, there will be many new faces on it, judges appointed by our president who will be willing, after a decade of change, to interpret the Constitution the way it was written, not the way they wanted it to be written. If that happens, the Regents will win their case.
Then you're advocating that the Regents spend the public's money in taking this case to the Supreme Court to keep communism out of the university.
I can't imagine any better way to spend the people's money than by defending the people against communism.
A few days later, on October 24th, 1969, Angela Davis and her teacher, Herbert Marcuse, attended an enormous rally at the place that first opened up the college system to the Frankfurt School's Marxist activism.
One of the largest to gather at UC Berkeley this year. The speaker, New Left philosopher Herbert Marcuse, and his student, avowed communist Angela Davis.
Herbert Marcuse stepped to the microphone first.
This is not a victory celebration. On the contrary, I believe that the fight is just beginning to start. The fight against all those who want to make your university a training school for the perpetuation of a society, the security of which and the prosperity of which is based on the oppression and enslavement of other peoples within the national frontiers and without. The fight against these powers must go on, because it is a fight for you. They want to block your mind. You may not know it. You may still think you are nothing but a bunch of intellectuals separated from the masses. The government knows far better than you know, and they have a far more realistic evaluation of the power you already represent. The full weight of repression is falling upon the schools and universities and on the black militants in the ghettos with whom you have joined the fight. If there is anyone capable of breaking the insanity which is daily reproduced, it is you, and it is only you, black, white, and brown, who can break this insanity.
Marcuse then laid out the plan for a Marxist revolution in America. It had to happen through the institution of education.
Now I admit all these suggestions are centered on the university and on the campus. There are larger tasks, especially the forming of the alliances with the large oppressed groups in this country, black and brown, a process of long-range education. But don't minimize the university as your base. It is in the universities, in the schools, that the system trains its new cadres whom they need for its reproduction. And this is you. Far from being a bunch of intellectuals, you form one of the most important contingents, important for the reproduction of the system. You have to show that you can resist, that you can refuse to be made mere servants of the system. Again, it is up to you. You are fighting for yourselves. May I now come to my most pleasant task? I have not yet told you why Angela Davis was the ideal victim for this repression. There are many reasons. She is black, she is militant, she is a communist, she is highly intelligent, and she is pretty. And this combination is more than the system can tolerate. I would like to introduce to you now, not my student, but my colleague on the faculty of the University of California, Angela Davis.
Now, I think what we have to do is, while demanding things like open admissions, we have to take their advice too. We have to go to the streets. We have to talk about a complete and total change in the structures of this society, because that's the only way that a concept like academic freedom is going to be made relevant. I feel that they are becoming increasingly afraid of the people, of the students. They are afraid of Herbert Marcuse, and most of all, they're afraid of the power the students are beginning to assert throughout the universities. And they have every right to be afraid of us, because we are continually demonstrating to them that they have every right to be afraid, and we have to do this over and over again. They have every right to be afraid. Now, radicals are emerging on the campuses throughout the whole university system and are being attacked. This is just a reflection of the emergence of radical movements dedicated to destroying the capitalist society all over the society. I think that we have to view the court decision that was made a few days ago as a victory from one point of view. It's a victory because it exposes to the people the increasingly fascist tendencies in this country. We also have to consider the reason for the decision. The decision came about only because of mass pressure, only because of the fact that all over the state there were demonstrations, there were indications that we would take over. And I think the judge who made the decision realized this when he said that he wanted to effect this decision within a few hours, because otherwise he knew it was going to be decided in the streets. I think he was right. And what we have to do at this point is to use that decision, because that decision gives us a little more flexibility, a little more movement in order to escalate the struggle in the society.
And the struggle was definitely escalating.
Just a few weeks later, on an early December 1969 morning, the Los Angeles Police Department descended on Angela Davis's comrades, the Black Panthers' Los Angeles chapter headquarters.
The intermittent warfare between the Black Panthers and police erupted today in Los Angeles. There, a group of them barricaded themselves in their headquarters and fought police with automatic weapons and hand grenades for 5 hours before surrendering.
Early this morning, Los Angeles police moved on the local Black Panther headquarters to serve arrest and search warrants. They were met by gunfire. It turns out the Panther headquarters was a small fortress, complete with a sandbag bunker and automatic weapons. There were some escape hatches, but they weren't used today. Police said they've known for some time that the Panthers were storing illegal weapons, and they also expected the Panthers to use them. So 300 officers were assigned to this morning's raid. Police began to tear gas the building and threatened to go in after the occupants. Finally, a white flag emerged, and 11 men and women filed out.
It is apparent that the undeclared war between the police and the Panthers has reached alarming proportions. Party members at 30 chapters across the country have stockpiled arsenals of automatic weapons, shotguns, pistols, and homemade bombs.
Angela Davis arrived on the scene shortly after the shootout ended. She fielded questions from reporters.
Did you know that this was going to happen?
How was I to know that the police were going to break into the Panther office at 4:30 in the morning? They obviously didn't broadcast it.
Yeah, how did you hear about it?
We got a call from someone who was inside who said that the police had come and had attacked their office.
What do you plan to do? Do you plan to act as intermediary or in any capacity like that?
I'll do anything I can.
Angela Davis felt that the communist revolution was afoot, and Herbert Marcuse's new alliance had to do everything they could to usher it in. The UCLA associate professor took to the streets to rally the troops.
I'm representing the Che Lumumba Club of the Communist Party. There is a conspiracy in the land. This conspiracy to commit murder and genocide on our people forces us to exercise our constitutional right to bear arms and to use those arms to defend our community, our families, and ourselves. Cowards and people.
Serious trouble was brewing. The radicals just needed another trigger to further the revolution, and that trigger would come just a few months later. Welcome back to Red Pilled America. So after a police raid on the Los Angeles branch of the Black Panthers, Angela Davis called for revolutionaries to take up arms to protect their community. Serious trouble was brewing. The radicals just needed another trigger to further their revolution, and that trigger would come in April 1970.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. Tonight, American and South Vietnamese units will attack the headquarters for the entire communist military operation in South Vietnam.
The Vietnam War was expanding into Cambodia. It was just the type of move that the radical agitators needed to escalate their struggle. It brought in the anti-war moderates that were unaware that a socialist insurrection was underway. At Kent State, a university in Kent, Ohio, a chapter of the Students for a Democratic Society, or SDS, had been agitating the entire month leading up to Nixon's announcement. SDS was the same militant socialist group that took over Columbia University with radical black students a few years earlier. Another radical student group spoke on campus, reportedly urging students to kill their parents because they were the first oppressors. The students were primed. So when Nixon announced the expansion of the war into Cambodia, it was just the trigger these radicals needed to bring in the moderates. A national student strike was announced. The agitators used the Black Power fist on promotional posters, but this time, they colored the fist to signify the alliance of oppressed revolutionaries. The night after Nixon's speech, hundreds of thousands of students began taking to the streets and college campuses. A witness described how the situation escalated at Kent State.
A group of young people, mostly, as far as we can determine, the university students, were milling around the downtown area in Kent, where there is a collection of bars and nightclubs where most of the younger crowd frequent. First, they were simply milling around, not really unruly or disorderly. The crowd got larger, and then the violence broke out at about midnight.
The four big main picture windows at the First Federal Building here have been broken, and the glass you hear now is the sound of it being knocked out for repair. Service trucks downtown on North Water now, helping with cleanup procedures. There's various 55-gallon barrels here just filled with glass.
Students nationwide began targeting the primary military facilities they had access to, ROTC buildings. The Kent State Radicals burned their ROTC building to the ground.
The students are now marching around the hub and onto the commons.
They're now just hosing down what is left of the building. It's about a stack of 5 feet of rubble.
After 3 nights of violence, the Ohio National Guard was brought in to deal with the situation.
The guardsmen had been ordered onto the campus after the university's ROTC building had been burned to the ground.
Fearing further destruction of university property, or worse, from the radical students, the National Guard moved in to the Kent State protesters in an attempt to break up the student strike rally.
The National Guard was called in over the weekend by Ohio Governor James Rhodes. Today, when 1,500 students started an anti-war rally on the university commons, the guardsmen surrounded them. Then, when some students started throwing rocks, the guard moved in with tear gas. The students were forced up a hill by the tear gas. Some of them started throwing gas canisters back at the guardsmen. Others threw rocks.
The student protesters were defiant. Some were even laughing, not taking seriously the bayonet-wielding National Guardsmen approaching them. The situation turned deadly serious. A student protester described the moment.
Suddenly, they turned around, got on their knees, as if they were ordered to, they did it all together, aimed, and personally, I was standing there saying, they're not going to shoot. They can't do that. If they're going to shoot, it's going to be blank.
Assistant Adjutant General Frederick Wenger said later the guardsmen did not open fire until after they came under sniper fire themselves.
The shots were definitely coming my way, because when a bullet passes your head, it makes a crack. I hit the ground behind the curb, looking over. I saw a student hit. He stumbled and fell. He was running towards a car. Another student tried to pull him behind the car. Bullets were coming through the windows of the car. It was maybe 25, 30, 35 seconds of sporadic firing. Firing stopped. I lay there maybe 10 or 15 seconds. I got up. I saw four or five students lying around in the lot. By this time, it was like mass hysteria. Students were crying. They were screaming for ambulances. I heard some girl screaming, they didn't have blanks, they didn't have blanks. No, they didn't.
When the dust settled, four students lay dead on the campus grounds.
At Kent State University in Ohio, after the killing of four students yesterday, the National Guard first said its men opened fire in response to sniper fire aimed at them. Then today, the Guard's commanders backed away from that and said there was no sniper fire, and then said later they were not sure. They said no order was given to shoot the students, that apparently the guardsmen thought themselves threatened somehow and opened fire on their own initiative, firing 30-odd rounds before their officers stopped them, but not before four students were dead and 10 others wounded, three critically.
I think that the guardsmen were provoked beyond reason. I believe that we used every conceivable effort to get the people to disperse and to move long before the formation moved up the hill. And we regret as much as anyone that people were killed and wounded. We even regret the fact that it was necessary to be here.
An estimated million-plus students participated in the May 1970 National Campus Unrest. According to the National Strike Information Center, protests and walkouts occurred on nearly 900 campuses across the country. Violent clashes between law enforcement and students took place at a reported 26 college campuses. At Herbert Marcuse's UCSD campus, in the location that the Marxist professor often led protests, one graduate student doused his body with gasoline and self-immolated himself. By the end of the national student strike, a reported 30 ROTC buildings were either burned down or bombed. The whole event felt like a civil war, a socialist revolution. The violence had escalated to a level that created a counter-movement against the student protesters.
Many who called themselves the silent majority rallied around President Nixon to show their support for him and at the same time to visually display their disgust with anti-war demonstrators. In New York City, construction workers, some still wearing the bright yellow hard hats of their trade, confronted a line of anti-war demonstrators. While the students shouted, "Peace now," the hard hats rallied with signs and slogans that said, "All the way, USA," and "America, love it or leave it."
We want to say to the students that maybe today we can open the door for discussion and say to the students who have problems, we're willing to work with you. We're the fellows who build this country. We're the fellows who build the hospitals when they need them and they're sick. We build the bridges and tunnels for them to get around in. We build the schools that they want to burn down. And we also build all of the other things in this country.
Americans had had enough. The socialists were using anti-war sentiment to incite insurrection on college campuses all across the country. Many believed it was now time to take serious action to end the conflict. In that same month, May 1970, UC Regents voted to take the authority away from UCLA on the issue of rehiring Angela Davis. Her firing again seemed imminent. President Nixon took action as well.
Prompted by the Kent State deaths and the deaths of two black students at Jackson State University in Mississippi, the president named a 9-member commission to explore campus violence and to recommend ways of resolving student grievances peacefully.
The FBI was also in the midst of a national campaign to break up the violent Black Panthers and Students for a Democratic Society. An enormous backlash was underway, but Angela Davis decided to keep up the heat.
In June 1970, the communist UCLA professor adopted a new cause, one that could rally criminals to their alliance. She befriended a young Black Panther named Jonathan Jackson. Jonathan's older brother, George Jackson, was serving a prison sentence. After being incarcerated at San Quentin for armed robbery in 1961, George Jackson began racking up disciplinary infractions that extended his sentence. In the process, he befriended a man named W.L. Nolan, who introduced him to Marxism. George became a devout follower of the ideology. He'd later remark, "I met Marx, Lenin, Trotsky, Engels, and Mao when I entered prison, and they redeemed me." He began writing on socialism and became a revolutionary advocating for a Marxist revolution by any means necessary, including violence. He was eventually transferred from San Quentin to Soledad Prison with his friend Nolan. Then, in early 1970, Nolan was killed by a guard during a fight on the prison yard. George Jackson was overheard talking about getting revenge for the killing of his friend. And a few days later, he was accused, along with two other prisoners, of killing a Soledad prison guard. The three became known as the Soledad Brothers, and they were all facing the death penalty. George's young Black Panther brother, Jonathan Jackson, had befriended Angela Davis, herself a member of the Los Angeles chapter of the Black Panther Party. Angela learned about George Jackson and his Marxist revolutionary books, and she became seduced by his writing, eventually falling in love with the prisoner. She decided to take up the Soledad Brother cause, hoping to free what she called political prisoners. In late June 1970, just as her fate as a UCLA professor was being determined by the UC Regents, Angela joined Black Panther Jonathan Jackson to protest for the release of his brother and the other Soledad brothers.
I want to get on to the business that we came here to do today.
Famed actress and communist sympathizer Jane Fonda attended the protest to support Angela Davis. Hollywood was getting connected to the black militants.
Jane Fonda ran down the fact that we really, really need money. And I really hope that you will give everything you can, keeping in mind that you are defending yourselves. You're defending yourselves, you're defending the struggle, you're defending the cause of liberation. So while the brothers and sisters are circulating in the crowd, I'd like to run down the demands that we, the Soledad Brothers Defense Committee, have formulated, which we think will be able to begin to deal effectively with what's happening in the prison.
As Angela, Jonathan Jackson, and Jane Fonda marched on the Department of Corrections to demand they free George Jackson and all so-called political prisoners, the UC Regents had decided on Angela Davis's fate at UCLA.
Today, in a rare action, the Board of Regents voted 15-6 to overrule the university and fire her. Governor Reagan voted with the majority. He said it wasn't because she's a communist, but rather because she is unprofessional. While the regents were voting, Miss Davis was a few blocks away in a rally protesting the treatment of black prisoners in Soledad State Prison. She sees her dismissal as a case of political repression, which she may or may not challenge.
I suppose I just lost that job at UCLA as a result of my political opinions and activities. I'm going to keep on struggling to free the Soledad brothers and all political prisoners because I think that what has happened to me is only a very tiny, minute example of what is happening to them.
Some UCLA professors plan to raise money to pay her salary so she can continue to teach. The controversy is not over.
By the summer of 1970, Angela Davis was out of her professor job. Herbert Marcuse was officially retired from UC San Diego. College unrest was being investigated by the Nixon administration, and the FBI was going after the Black Panthers nationwide. America had had enough of the violence associated with this socialist uprising. Then, in early August 1970, something shocking happened.
How did it happen that Superior Court Judge Harold Haley and three others were killed?
On August 7, 1970, Black Panther Jonathan Jackson entered a Northern California courtroom with a rifle and several other weapons, handed them to black inmates that were involved in a trial that was in process, and took several hostages.
Investigators for the Marin County Sheriff's Department still are not sure of all the details, but they are piecing together the story from witnesses and participants in the shocking crime that took place here yesterday.
A photographer that entered the scene to the hostage situation witnessed Panther Jonathan Jackson and the inmates leaving with the hostages.
And one of the men, as they left in the elevator, after they told me that they didn't want me as a hostage, did say, "We want the Soledad brothers freed by 12:30 today."
Jonathan Jackson, the criminal escapees, and their hostages exited the courtroom and made their way to an awaiting van.
One of the witnesses in the van said they heard a shot. Immediately, the judge's head was blown off. The assistant district attorney then grappled with the inmates, procured a gun, and shot three of them.
The judge, Jonathan Jackson, and two of the escaping inmates were killed. Then, within a matter of a week, the story took an unbelievable turn. Several of the guns used in the escape attempt, including the rifle that blew off the judge's head, were purchased by Angela Davis.
What was she doing with those guns?
I haven't the foggiest idea what she was doing with the guns at that time.
Next time, on the conclusion of Red-Pilled America's Woke Army.
Supporters of the black liberation movements are stepping up the pressure in the campaign to free Angela Davis, the black philosophy lecturer and communist who's now facing a charge of murder in California.
Red-Pilled America is an iHeartRadio original podcast. It's produced by me, Adriana Cortez, and Patrick Carelci for Inform Ventures. Thanks for listening.